Our posture matters. Stand up straight, our parents would say to us. You know, the way you stand, the way you greet someone says something about you. It also says something about what you think about the person you're greeting. It says to them, I like you or I don't like you. You know, we can use our posture to intimidate someone, to stand over them, or to make someone feel like $1 million, to be warm, embracing in our manner. Our posture matters. It's what James has been largely talking about in this letter. Not so much in the way that we literally hold ourselves, but in the way we spiritually hold ourselves. James spelt out for us in no uncertain terms last week exactly what our posture should be. It is to be that of a humble person. Chapter 4, verse 6, God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. Verse 7, submit yourselves then to God. It's the posture of a worshiper, someone who is seeking to walk the way of wisdom, not the way of the world. And we saw that wisdom begins with worship. You know, it's the posture of someone who has been swept away by the majesty, by the glory, by the power, by the transcendence of the Creator God. And their only response is to bow the knee to King Jesus and worship. It is with this background that we come this lunchtime to this question. I mean, what does it look like to be worshippers in practice? And this is the question James seeks to address in this passage. And the answer really shouldn't surprise us. Do you want to be wise? Do you want to live a godly life? Well, it's really rather simple, not complicated. Submit all our actions, all that we do and all that we say, to God. Starting, we see there in verses 11 and 12, with all that we say, we are to submit our tongues to God. James is like a dog with a bone when it comes to the tongue. You know, he just can't let the issue go. It's obvious that he thinks that the original readers have got a problem with it. Remember back in chapter 3, verse 6, there he writes, "The tongue corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire." It's why James is determined to tame their tongues, like one breaks a wild horse. The truth is, the tongue is just as much of a problem for us. You can't read these first couple of verses without feeling unease. You know, we don't want to admit it, but if we're honest, we judge our neighbor. End of verse 12. We slander them. You know, look out of the curtain and, you know, oh, look, how on earth did they afford that new car? Speaking to the colleague in work saying, oh, how did they manage to be able to buy that new phone? Phil wears the same clothes every time I see him. Jill never wears the same clothes twice. You know what I'm saying? The Pharisee is alive and well in each and every one of us. It is just so easy, isn't it, to say something against others. And why does this happen? Well, James is very practical. It's because we set ourselves in the place of God. We take on the posture of judge. And who are we, honestly, to cast judgment on anyone? Now, when we pass comment on someone, we sit in judgment of their actions, of their choices, of their tastes. And who do we think we are? God opposes the proud. Verse 12, there is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor? No, it's a wrong posture. We are lording ourselves over others. It's often the case, don't you find, that the words that come out of our mouths only betray our ignorance. Mark Twain was spot on. It is better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt. I have a couple of teenagers living in my house who are bold in their pronouncements. Yet often, as a father, I listen on, and as they speak, they betray how much they've still got to learn. And it's just as true for us. And we pass a comment about someone. We make a pronouncement. And our Heavenly Father's listening on thinking, still got a bit of growing up to do. They'll learn. Particularly when we cast judgment on another. And of all the things we say, I suspect this is the moment when God must look on us, roll his eyes and think, at least I hope they'll learn. You see, to judge another is not to understand grace. It's not to understand the gospel. It's not to understand the poverty with which we come to the cross. It's not to understand why our posture is one of submission and worship. And it betrays our folly before God. It's not to understand that we have been saved when we could have been destroyed. Yet we have only received grace. How dare we judge another when all we have received is the goodness of God? It's to behave like the unjust servant in the parable. So if we want to be godly, we are to submit our tongues to God, but also submit our plans to God. Verses 13 to 17. Now, you will have come across personality tests like Myers-Briggs, Strength Finders. There's lots of them out there, and they'll tell you all sorts of different things about you. You know, whether, for example, you are a past, present, or future person. You know, whether you live in the now, the yesterday, or the tomorrow. Now, are you always looking back to the good old-fashioned days? Or are you restless? Always looking to the future. You even struggle to be present in a conversation because you're thinking about the next meeting you're going on to. What type of person are you? You may not know. Let me ask you another question. What are you like when it comes to making plans? Are you a future planner or a spontaneous planner? Now, we've got both here in verse 13. The futurist is making plans for tomorrow. The spontaneous is making plans for today and the now. To do this, to do that. To carry on business. To make money. Is that us? It's certainly our workplaces making plans. Setting aims for now and for the future. You know, the 2020 plan, you know, every organization seems to have one. You see, the West End, London, it's all about plans, realizing my potential. It's a focus on what I can do to better myself, to fulfill my plans. And James is deeply wary of this mindset. He sees it as arrogant, verse 16, even evil, as foolish. Why? Verse 14. Because you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. Now, we don't even know with any degree of certainty what is going to happen in the next 30 minutes. Brexit. Who will be the next cabinet minister to resign? Now, when we make my life plan with such confidence, we have forgotten the middle of verse 14. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. It's about our posture again. And who are we? Fragile, vulnerable human beings. Here but for a moment. I used to drive the boys to school down a road that was surrounded by fields. And a morning mist had often settled on the fields. And yet by the time I did the return journey, the mist had lifted. It had vanished. There but for a moment, like our lives here on earth. See, it's why our posture matters towards our plans. verse 15. You ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or do that. We should qualify all of our plans with if it is the Lord's will. It is why our parents' generation used to say something like this. You know, see you next week, God willing. It's not that it's wrong to have business plans or life plans, but we should always add God willing. And that will keep us humble. It keeps us from boasting, verse 16. It keeps our posture right because it reminds us, as our next breath is dependent on God's mercy, so are all our plans. Now, there's one more thing before we move on to our next point that James insists that we listen to. Do take note of verse 17. Is there something good that you ought to be doing, and you are not doing it? Is there a plan that you should be acting upon? You know it, but you are in denial. Take note. To not do that good thing, James says, is a sin. So we are to submit our tongues to God, submit our plans to God, but also submit our possessions to God. Are you a hoarder? And how much of your living area in your home is cluttered with possessions? To what extent do you find it difficult to throw something away? One lady who died earlier in the year in North Wales had collected so much stuff that when police eventually broke in, they couldn't move for the clutter. Neighbours had not seen her for a while, and it took the police 4 days to find her body. Eventually, she was found submerged in her things. She was 94 years old, and it would seem that she'd never thrown a thing away. Over time, she'd become a recluse, wary and suspicious of others. It's often the way, isn't it, with wealthy people. You can't help but think of Howard Hughes, the New York billionaire. You remember, his hair grew long, he had twisted fingernails, he was pale and thin. His wealth corroded him. It ate him up. It's verses 1 to 3. He had hoarded wealth, end of verse 3, and it destroyed him. You are not your own. Your possessions are not your own. You are God's. Your possessions are God's. It is God's money in your pocket. And if you don't use it for him and the extension of his kingdom, be careful that it doesn't destroy you. Now, this is the riches James is criticizing. The believer who is tight-fisted, who poo-poos tithing, who is building up his barns and not using the resources God has given him or her wisely, generously. It's not that it's wrong to be rich. It's just that with money comes greater responsibility to use it well. And compared to the rest of the world, every single one of us sitting here is wealthy. It is again about our posture. Lord, how can I best use all that you have given me for your glory? It's really rather simple, actually. You know, we can spend so much time aspiring for wealth, but you know, the more money we have, it only feeds our greedy monster that lives, you know, the one inside of all of us. See, the fatter the greedy monster gets, the harder it can be to be generous. And the easier it is to be corrupted. To defraud another, verse 4. To rot in self-indulgence, verse 5. To oppress the well-off, verse 6. It is why, to protect ourselves from ourselves, the greedy monster, that we would do well to submit our possessions to God. See, godly living is all about posture, our posture to God. And James knows this. So he says, you submit our tongues, our plans, our possessions to God, but also we need to submit our suffering to God. Now, our time is nearly gone, but a final word on this last section. And James here returns to the central thrust of his letter, where he began back there in chapter 1, verse 2. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. It is for us to submit even our trials to God, to see that they are all part and parcel of his will, that he is using them to grow us as disciples. And it helps to do this with verses 7 to 9 in mind. And if we keep one eye on the fact that God is coming back soon, it gives us reason to hope, even in the face of the immediate pressing hardships that we endure. No, this world is not the end. There is a better place to come. Our pain and suffering is only temporary. Now, you may be weary and overwhelmed this lunchtime. Submit your trials, your sufferings, your hardships to God. For honest, this is all sometimes we can do. We can't make sense of the mess in our lives. Yet we know, don't we, that Jesus is coming back, and we know that we've got to stand firm. But it is tough. And it's why James here, verse 10, through to the end says, remember Job. You know, Job felt battered and bruised. He felt like God had deserted him. He'd lost everything, possessions, his plans were ruined. He could do nothing else but submit himself to God. His posture mattered. God did, in the end, of course, bless Job with a double portion of what he had lost. Our posture matters. God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble. Do you want to live a godly, practical life? Do you want to be wise? Then submit everything to God. Put everything you have in his hands. Let his will be done, and you will see that he is full of compassion and mercy, and he longs to see you thrive, and he longs to bless you. Amen.